time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. It is Monday, September 10th. Hard to believe. Already racing through the month of September. And we're looking forward to another podcast here with you. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals with an increasing number of realtors and other industry participants, as well as the regulators dialing in and see what's going on in the industry. But we're grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime, anywhere. I was just at, this last week, the Social Survey Create WOW Summit in San Ramon, California. It was they lived up to their desire of the title of the seminar, Creating WOW, and it was a lot of WOW creation. Talk about social media, obviously, what's going on, the growth of social media, the impact it is having on our industry. Many of the industry leaders in social media marketing were there. Got to meet Casey Crawford's brother-in-law, Jake, is there. I had to stand two steps up to just get even with him. So much fun to meet so many of them, people that do the marketing at these major institutions. And folks, there is more going on there than you can imagine. And if you're not taking social media seriously as a marketing tool, check it out. This week, I'll be at Housing Wire's Engage marketing event. It's up in Dallas this week, 13th and 14th. It's a two-day summit of the top e-marketers and marketing executives from all of our industry. And by the way, you go to our website, Lickin' on Lending, and see a link to this. Some of the upcoming things that are also going on, I want to make you aware of. As you guys remember, we had Brendan on and Amy on from MERS. Amy wrote me and said, hey, give us a shout out in your radio program November 15th. In Irvine, on November 15th, they're having their one-day e-mortgage boot camp. And it really is where everyone's getting together and talking about that. So check it out. Also, that link is on our Lickin' on Lending website. So anyway, a lot going on. What was so complimenting and reaffirming to us when we were up in San Ramon this last week is how many people that are now doing podcasts came over and said, we started because of you, or you had a big influence on us. We listened to yours. Many compliments that came out. So I want to say thank you to everyone that does listen to our podcast. We're honored to have you here, and we're honored to be one of the voices and a growing number of voices that are podcasting about what's happening in the industry. So anyway, let's get into some of the things we've got coming up today's podcast. On the Hot Topic segment, we have Brian Boyke, who will be here. He's the Director of Product Strategy at Simplifile. We're going to be focusing on e-closing and e-mortgages, and we're going to continue with one of the hottest topics in the industry, and that is the digital mortgages. So it's all involved in the digital mortgage. Well, it'd be digital mortgage closings, digital originations. The world is going there, and that was what came out so clear in San Ramon this last week at the conference. So go on, learn more. We're going to be doing a lot more on that. We recorded a number of interviews while I was at the conference, had our equipment set up, and so I look forward to be sharing those in the weeks and months ahead. Big thank you out to all of our sponsors that are here with us. We have a thank you for the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. Thank you for their participation in what we do, their support of us. Got a chance to spend some time with Marcia Davies there at San Ramon. She had an Empower meeting there for all of us to get together and really see what we can do to support women in the marketplace. And it was very well received. It was crammed, and I was just inspired by the stories that are there and what leaders are doing to help support the women in this industry. And it's not just a women's organization, it is for all of us to join to really focus in on what we can do, because it has been a good old boy club, and that is fast changing, and definitely get involved. Empower is going to be having their own special event in Washington, D.C. at the annual conference. It's on Saturday, most of Saturday. We'll be there. We'll have our sound booth set up. Encourage you to come in and be there. No extra fees to join that or to be a part of that. Also, special thank you to Arch MI, the creator of the innovative RateStar program. Black Knight, the leading provider of integrated software and analytical solutions. as well as Open Mortgage, a leading buyer of reverse mortgages and the home of some of the top LOs in the country. We have our two favorite co-ops out in the market, Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. Both of these are co-ops creating competitive advantages for their lenders and their vendor members. It's a more intimate way which you can get together. Fannie and Freddie are there. You can get so much closer when you're attending one or both, or become a member of and attend the events that both of these co-ops put on. Also, a special thank you to Velma, an efficient marketing platform that gets the word out about your business. We use them for our podcast. Big thank you out to Brent Emler and the team at Velma. They do a great job. Also, Knowledge Coop, providing easy and fun training for mortgage lenders, as well as Predictive, helping lenders connect with consumers through intelligent and powerful pay-per-click marketing strategies that will help you connect with your next buyer. Finally, thank you to Andy, Alice, Alan, and Joe for their contributions to this podcast. So, without further ado, let's go check out the MBA Mortgage Minute with Rob Van Rapphorst.
I'm Rob Van Rapphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. This week, MBA led a broad coalition of 29 groups in a letter calling on the Trump administration and Congress to complete the job of reforming the GSEs. The letter coincided with the 10-year anniversary of the GSEs being placed into government conservatorship. Also this week, the House Financial Services Committee held a hearing entitled, A Failure to Act, How a Decade Without GSE Reform Has Once Again Put Taxpayers at Risk. A largely academic panel addressed past mistakes, positive recent innovations, such as transferring of credit risk to private capital, and potential legislative and administrative actions which should be taken to ensure stability in the housing market. To coincide with the hearing, Chairman Jeb Hensarly and Representative John Delaney introduced a bipartisan piece of legislation aimed at reforming the GSEs. And finally, mortgage apps decreased 0.1%, and the average contract interest rate for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage increased to 4.80% from 4.78% the week before. Thanks for joining me this week.
Yeah, good job. Lots going on there. Jeb Hensarling's bill, it's got support from both sides of the aisle. Seems to be getting some more attention. We're going to be focusing on that bill later and probably get a couple comments from Alice. Look forward to getting that. Let's talk about the digital business card. This is something that I've been promoting for a while. You sit and think we've been handing out this old-fashioned business card forever. I encourage you to check out the new digital business card. It is something that you can use to share not only your contact information, but you can put in your references, you can put in your websites, multiple websites, and you can have up to 10 business cards that represent your various products and services. We are using that here in our firm, and along with our radio program, and it is getting some wild reviews. Check it out at our website, Lickin' on Lending. A couple of conferences that are coming up. We have October 2nd. I'll be speaking in Denver at the Mortgage Expo there. Be sure to check that out. It's a Colorado Mortgage Expo. And then also October 23rd at the Hilton in Oakland. Back to Oakland, California. I was there last week. Flew in and out of there. It's for the Northern California Mortgage Expo. Both of these events are put on by Vince and his team at mortgageconferences.com. Check it out, mortgageconferences.com. All right, let's get over to our friend Les Parker and see what he's got for the macro look of what's going on in the markets. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by Loan Logic.
There's a fire starting in my heart.
They could have lost it all, rolling in the deep. They had the funds inside and ran, but they played them to a winning. Investing in emerging markets tends to not be through thick and thin. Investors like the high returns, but are ready to run to U.S. treasuries when things crumble. They run to escape losses and pocket winnings. Currency crises linger in the memories of international investors. Declines in these foreign investments underscores the problems with forced sales and pockets of illiquidity. New investors pick up the collateral damage while emerging market debtors cry, "We could have had it all." These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Yeah. Emerging markets is going to be an interesting part of where this all is heading. I was listening to the podcast from the Atlanta Federal Reserve this morning earlier, and there's more focus on that. Joe Farrell, What do you think? Do you think we're going to have ourselves some issues? Is more of the issues coming in from that could have some aha moments on our interest rates from the emerging markets? Your thoughts?
Dave, there are so many places it could come from. That certainly being one. And, you know, who knows where the next headline is going to come from as far as, you know, the political environment here, and makes it just a very difficult time to feel comfortable about what you think is going to happen in the future.
It really does. And I'm speaking this week. In fact, I fly out today and I'm speaking at Tidewater Mortgage, and I'm going to be speaking to their sales group about the economy and where things are headed. So I got Mike Fratantoni's latest updated slides from the MBA. I'm pulling in all the content I can have, and so it's going to be interesting. So what else is going on? What's going on today?
Yeah, today's a nice day. It's seen very little movement in MBS prices. Therefore, mortgage rates are about where they ended the day Friday. Stock market's off a little bit, but not a lot. So no economic data and no new headlines. So today's a quiet day. Now, not true for last week.
Mm-mm.
So last week, again, we lost. MBS prices fell and mortgage rates rose. Over the last 2 weeks, rates are about 1/8% higher than they were, but they're still about where they were a month ago. So it's not like it's been a big movement. It's just a little movement inside the range. The week ending last Friday, rates rose about 8 basis points during the week. And I'm a little surprised it didn't rise more.
Yeah, I was too.
The economic data, I mean, it was really good data. Both the ISM indexes were better than expected. Manufacturing was much better than expected. Services was better. Jobs numbers, you know, the big thing in the jobs numbers were the wage increases. They rose at an annualized rate of 2.9%, which is the most they've risen over a one-year period since 2009. That's they rose 2.9% over the rate of August. So the highest wage increase since 2009. And if you look at that over the last few months, it's been a pretty steady increase, which is going to have an influence on the Fed. You know, they're looking at the trend.
You would think it would.
Yeah. I mean, 1 month doesn't make it, but you've seen four small, continuous sort of increases in wages. And so that's certainly going to weigh on the Fed. The net new jobs in August were good, better than expected, but prior months were revised a little lower, so it kind of offset it. You know, rates probably didn't rise more because of the uncertainty that we talked about earlier. Global economic concerns, you know, especially in Venezuela and Turkey, where there's concerns about their ability to repay debt. And then the reports of dysfunction in the White House certainly creates a little bit of uncertainty that investors have to put in the back of their mind. And then looking at this week, Dave, several pretty significant things that you should plan to pay attention to. JOLTS report comes out tomorrow. More information on the job situation.
It gives us a good point. For those that don't know, Job Opening and Labor Turnover Survey is what JOLTS is the acronym for. So it is a deeper dive into it. And you're the one that turned me on to that one report. So I always pay attention to that when it comes out. Very interesting. And then we got PPI.
PPI on Wednesday. CPI, the more important, on Thursday. Also on Thursday is the ECB meeting. That can have an influence on our rates. Friday is retail sales, which is a very important indicator of economic activity, along with industrial production. So pretty significant data coming out. Their Fed members are going to be speaking every day this week, and so that'll be interesting to hear. It's all but certain that a rate increase is going to come from their September meeting. The question is going to be about the December meeting and whether or not there's any clues as to whether or not another increase is going to happen then. And then always, as we mentioned, pay attention to the political news. There's lots more talk about increasing tariffs with China. And then the global concerns that come from some of the emerging markets and their underlying strength and or weakness and their ability to repay their debts. So, again, it makes it hard to predict, but strong economic data is certainly good for your business environment, but will lead to increases in interest rates. But a flight to safety could offset that.
There is a number of factors playing into this. I think the geopolitical ones that are going to be the most interesting ahead, the tariffs. I was listening to this podcast by the Atlanta Federal Reserve, and that was fascinating. And there's not too much certainty, but there's more of a thought of
we are not going to see as much many rate hikes because of some of the factors going on, like you alluded to, Turkey and the sovereign debt that's out there in the developing nations. And we could see that some of those crises. And then also that I also subscribe to the Bond Buyers podcast, and they were talking about a yield curve inversion. And I was talking to Les Parker about it. He says, don't worry, I don't think that's happening. It's going to flatten, but I don't see it. A yield curve inversion happening, but we shall see. But good job.
Well,
and appreciate you.
You know,
go ahead.
Some of that about the inversion is if it's a, sort of a manipulated yield curve, meaning the Fed continues to raise the short end the way that they have, and it goes becomes inverted. That's a little different than if the natural market environment were the cause of the inversion.
Correct. Yeah. Exactly right. So they don't want to get ahead of that and cause that, because I think Les was explaining when I was talking to him earlier today that 6 months of a yield curve inversion almost guarantees us heading into a recession. So not something that's probably going to happen. So interesting also to listen to the bantering between Trump and the Federal Reserve, but it's really no different than any other administration, probably with the exception of Obama. He did not seem to weigh in on the Federal Reserve as much, but Trump has no problem weighing in on everything. That's always going to create some interesting moments ahead. Yeah. Thanks so much. Appreciate you being here, Joe. And looking forward to having you participate in the Hot Topic segment. Let's go over to Open Mortgage, and then we're going to be jumping after a couple ads here. We're going to jump over to Alice, get a legislative update.
How do you really feel about realtors? Are they your referral source or your business partner? Hey, everyone. Scott Gordon here with a bit of sales science. It's often said that facts don't have feelings, but behavioral scientists are discovering more and more that the way we feel shapes our reality more than facts. So facts may not have feelings, but for many people, feelings are facts. What does this have to do with realtors? Well, let me ask you. When you think of realtors as referral partners, are you really thinking of them as referral partners or referral sources? This is a very important question to ask yourself. Every action you take toward those relationships will stem from your answer. If you feel that your realtors are sources of referrals, your actions are going to be very different. A source is not a partnership. You're going to invest the minimum amount of time into a source in order to extract the maximum profit. The problem with that is your source is a human being, and they are going to feel and perceive your actions. On the other hand, if you feel that your realtors are your partners, you're going to approach them differently. Partnerships are based on establishing and providing value. There are countless ways to provide value in your relationship, but they mean little if you aren't really feeling it. So, how do you feel about your realtors? Your answer says everything. If this sounds too good to be true, it's not. It's just the science of sales.
At the Knowledge Coop, we work hard to create training that engages and encourages our audience. Once people are engaged in training, they are more likely to stay focused and retain the information that they need to know. So here's your training tip for the week. Next time you have an important policy or bit of knowledge you need to train, do it in short clips. And make sure you sprinkle it in with a little bit of humor. Video training is highly impactful, but only when done in the way we've been conditioned through TV. Videos should be no more than 5 minutes, should get to the point, and humor should be sprinkled through to emphasize the important points. Memories are more powerful when attached to an emotion. If you need help with your company's training, please reach out to us at knowledgecoop.com, and we'd be happy to assist. And that's your training minute from the Knowledge Coop, which strives for easy and fun training for the mortgage industry powered by a smart digital platform.
Check out openmortgage.com, openmortgage.com to learn more. Check out all the videos there. You're looking how to do videos, check out Open Mortgage. And then another one that does amazing videos on training is the Knowledge Coop, folks. So KnowledgeCoop, KnowledgeCoop.com. Check it out. Alice, Alvy, good to have you with us. Appreciate you dialing in and being a part. What you got for the legislative update, Alice?
Well, I thought I'd just focus on what you had mentioned and Joe had mentioned just prior to the show, and that was the new House bill, new/old, right? Because some of what's in the bill is repeat of things we've seen before in other GSE reform legislation. So it's H.R. 6746, and Housing Wire did a good job of pulling together the bipartisan housing finance reform summary of key provisions and then also the bill itself. Some of the government bill websites don't have it posted yet, but thanks to that publication, I was able to go and grab it quickly. So one of the things to give everybody just some highlights about it, it does say in the headlines, of course, to repeal the GSE's charter. That gets everyone's attention because you say, well, what am I going to do then, right? If I don't have Fannie and Freddie, then how do I deliver loans? It definitely would be, has a wind down plan in it that would take, you know, in a 5-year period, FICO would have to figure something out. And then from there, there would be even further wind down for any existing assets that they would still hold. And the idea here being that separating Ginnie Mae out from under being a part of the Housing and Urban Development Department and moving it out on its own. And then therefore giving it the ability to serve as, a, you know, how the Ginnie Mae model, for those of you who may not be aware, you're an issuer. So as Union Home Mortgage, we're an issuer of the mortgage-backed security, whereas with Fannie and Freddie, the structure is different and you aren't actually the issuer in the same method. I think there's a lot of things within the concept that at first you go, okay, those first few steps, except for repealing Fannie and Freddie, but the first few steps of can you leverage what Ginnie Mae already has to come up with something? Seems like several parts of legislation do like to start there, and then of course you get all the dynamics in the weeds that make it a little more challenging. So the bill itself brings up bringing in some private credit enhancement that would have to be purchased by the issuers, meaning the lenders and the banks and all of us who currently work with Ginnie Mae Securities. It does say that it would eliminate things like high-risk loans, which includes a 3% down loan offered by Fannie and Freddie. So with FHA slash HUD being separate, those products, you know, we say, okay, well, at least I would still have my FHA, but I really like what Fannie and Freddie have as an opportunity with their 3% down loan. So, you know, it's not all roses in this to say we've fixed everything and we've gotten to keep things the way that they are. So there's a lot to deep dive in it to truly understand what might have a possibility. Henterling himself says that, you know, he doesn't see anything happening because he's retiring, but certainly getting some legislation on the table to get the conversation started after 10 years, definitely newsworthy to take a look at and see what possible next steps there might be. And then, of course, getting MBA's opinion on it. Since it just came out on the 7th, we haven't had a chance to line it up with the MBA's position. Dave, I know you'd be great at getting those pulled together and getting the MBA on the program here. But a couple of other key points I wanted to point out that are good within this. It would prohibit, or states to prohibit, price discrimination based on loan production volume. So that does help keep the playing field level for companies of all sizes. It does propose to allow the Federal Home Loan Bank system to participate. So again, also offering up some more diversity. But of course, as you know, with something like this, the devil is in the details, and actually, one, just coming up with a plan that you can get most people to agree on, and then secondly, actually figuring out a way to execute it and transition from the old to the new. So it's out there as more food to chew on with this topic, but not anything that definitely will be moving forward yet. That's my quick update on it, Dave, as we'll take some more time, I hope, in a future program to deep dive into what the opportunities here really might be.
I saw that, and I reached out to the MBA, and they're working on having someone come on and talk about everything. I think everyone's in the process of digesting it, and it's kind of like it may be too early to talk about things at this point, just to kind of see how it rides through. But a good point. I'm glad you covered it. Doing a good job, Alice. Thank you so much. Look forward to having you join in on the e-closing discussion here in a few minutes. Alan is not with us today, but he did send in his update. So we'll go over to listen to what Alan sent in. Looking forward to it, Alan.
Thanks for having me, David. Excited to be here. So I wanted to talk about next week's Source Media Digital Mortgage Conference in Las Vegas. There's going to be over 100 speakers, 35 demos, innovators, and decision makers. And as we prepare to hear from all these great folks next week, talking about customer acquisition strategy, convergence, and blockchain, I wanted to share the topic I think we're going to hear the most about, and it's business intelligence and mortgage. It's a big topic, and it's something we've been spending a lot of time and money on. At least we've tried, right? Well, we do know that with business intelligence in the past, our products are better with it. They're smarter than they may have been earlier on. They're better aligned to the services that you provide, and they should help you get further down the road trying to meet the expectations of your customers. Overall, as customers become more digital and their demand is more real time and our costs continue to compete for margins, we look at where do those investments make the most sense. We'll be hearing a lot about the systems and how they use artificial intelligence on top of that BI and machine learning next week. Many vendors are going to use those terms to explain how they're helping you gain a competitive edge, but more importantly, how you will refine the delivery of your products and service. I think it's fair to say for now, the way we look at data is in a few different ways. We look at uses in transactional data, right? We look at market intelligence data. We look at performance data, and then we want to benchmark against our peers. The result is the data makes us smarter. So where do we get all this data from? Well, some of us don't realize how much internal data we have, and our partners are helping make it easier to obtain that data. It's interesting. Some industry experts are saying that by 2020, only 2 years away, data will expand more than sevenfold by volume. So I think we should focus on five items next week. The first one is going to be performance assessment for results. How do you find anomalies? How do you know where you do really good? Number two is going to be fraud and compliance. How do you automate the things that are hard? Predict what's to come. Number three is risk. How do you manage the complex tasks like commissions and fair lending without the element of human error? Number four is how do you look at the customer segmentation for trends? Right, similar to number one, which was performance, but this one's a little bit different because we want to know what do our customers buy? What is the trend of how they buy our products? And what's different about those customers and the data? And really, number five is going to be how do we personalize product offerings? How do we reduce abandonment and how do we drive more sales? And really, there's one more item I didn't put on the list, which is how do we make the data actionable? What do we do? How do we either drive automated tasks and workflow? Or how do we become alerted about those areas of data that we've decided are risky or we should make action on? If you leave next week with a group of demos and new vendor prospects, that's fantastic. You're likely on your way to make a good investment that should return actionable results to better serve your customers. But if you're feeling empowered and that you want to give it a try on your own, there's a lot of great software platforms out there that either can help you get started or that you can leverage on your own with your own team. So, David, I look forward to seeing you next week. I look forward to meeting with everyone else. And on the following week, it'll be a great recap on all the wonderful things we saw at Digital Mortgage. With that, everybody, have a great day.
Yeah, Digital Mortgage is to be going on Las Vegas. Can't wait to get that report. Alan, safe travels to you today as you are out and about. Good job on that report. Sevenfold increase in data by 2020. Wow. It is going to take artificial intelligence, machine learning to get in and really digest and cull all that. That's what came out last week when we were together. It was looking at all the opportunities that are there and what we can do with the data. So much happening going on there. Let's run over to Jim Jump at Arch MI.
Hi, David. ArchMI is happy to be a proud sponsor of the program. Today, I'd like to let your listeners know about RateStar from Arch Mortgage Insurance. RateStar makes it easy to choose what type of mortgage insurance coverage your loan needs. Quotes are delivered in seconds and represent our most competitive ArchMI rates based on the strength and quality of the loan application. That's the power of RateStar. Getting a mortgage insurance quote has never been so powerful or so simple. And with that, I'll turn it back to you, David.
Good job. Appreciate it, Jim. And check it out. Arch Mortgage. Get a hold of your rep if you're not using their system. Andy Schell, good to have you here. I apologize, Andy. I saw your note after that Joe finished up. So let's kind of rewind back to some things that Joe was saying. You had a question for him, and I missed that. Sorry.
I did. So, Joe, if you can turn your mic back on. I had a quick question for you about a rate inversion, yield curve inversion, which is, I understand to remember from my finance classes, that is that basically that means that short-term rates are higher than long-term rates. And so, not to put you on the spot here, but what I'm seeing in interest rates, and I've been talking to originators about this, is right now, just today, I just pulled up some rates just to check. The 5-1 ARM is 4.7, and the 30-year is 4.4. So that says the short-term rates are already higher than the long-term rates. So why would anybody get a 5-1 ARM when you can get a 30-year for lower rate? So if officially the yield curve isn't inverted, why are mortgage rates inverted?
Well, you are putting me on the spot there.
Sorry about that. I've been like that for several weeks now.
It's got to be supply and demand, right? I mean, that's what creates the price people pay for things.
Exactly. I think it's an interesting anomaly, and maybe Les can talk about it at some point too, Dave.
Yeah.
We're talking about the future event of inversion, but I've been watching rates for the last 6 weeks, and they've been inverted. So where's the disconnect between mortgage rates and the actual yield curve, and what does that mean?
Well, it's a tough question because it's got a lot of people scratching their heads. Number one, that for those that don't understand the yield curve inversion, it's the difference between when the 2-year is higher than the 10-year. That's the definition. And then when you have a 30-year mortgage out there that trades oftentimes off of the 10-year, at least from a hedging standpoint, if I'm not mistaken, Andy, you can correct that. You're the hedging specialist.
Exactly right. No, the 10-year should be tied to the the 30-year should be tied to
mortgage.
The 10-year, and the 5-year yeah. should be tied to somewhere bigger than the 2-year, but we've got the 5-year higher than the 10-year. But the real yield curve isn't, but the mortgage rates are. So, that's a hum.
Well, we'll get Les to address that next week for our listeners. So tune back. Come back next week for the answer on that. That's a good question.
That's
exactly what I was trying to get it my head wrapped around earlier, because I'm speaking again this week on some of this. So I wanted to make sure I was up on all the latest. So because I saw that very interesting thing, the 5 years up, a little bit of a peak there. But the technical term is a 2-year and 10-year comparison, not the 5-year. So anyway. What's going on in your world, Prophet Doctor? You're busy with two things. You've got your consulting practice, which is on fire. Everyone wants to get your wisdom on how to improve the bottom line, and it is a mess. Right around 50% of the companies have a negative bottom line right now. Just saw some recent statistics come out the MBA, and it's trending the wrong way. It was at 40% of the companies were not profitable, had zero or less earnings, and that's trending up, unfortunately. So. People need you, Andy.
Yes. I've got several things to talk about. First off, real quick, and I think Joe's right on the supply and demand thing, because I just looked at the 3-1 arm, and it's even worse than the 5-year. It's at 4.9. So the 3-year arm's worse than the 5-1, and the 5-1's worse than the 30-year, which is tied to the 10-year. So interesting things to look at. But LOs, originators, are going to be wondering these questions. Dave?
I was just going to add in there other things, too, that go into the yield and the value of the mortgage, right? The servicing rights, the guarantee. So, you know, some of those have different economic consequences, not just the term of the loan. You know, it's not just the 3-year nature of the loan.
Exactly. See, maybe we can cover that more, because as originators look at rate sheets and they look at Fannie Mae screens or they look at capital markets and, you know, putting portfolio lenders aside, they go, why? Why? Why is this like this when that's like that? And the finance people say, well, it's not inverted and the rate sheet says that it is, and there's supply and demand, like you said, Joe, servicing multiples and blah, blah, blah. But I think it's an interesting topic to explore more.
It is. And here's the thing, one of the things. What do you think we're telling all of our LOs? Should they be economists or should they be LOs? It is what it is. Go sell. Don't try to be an economist. Don't look at the market. Listen to the radio program. We'll help you through it. Don't try to figure it out. Go sell.
I keep coming back and telling LOs.
I mean, it's good if you want to study and learn it, but don't let that get in the way of you doing your job. Do your job.
Get more loans. And then the customer asks you, what should I pick? Why is this one like that? Okay, so two quick things. I'm wasting time here. Sorry,
yes.
Dave. Accounting webinar starts October the 3rd. It's a five-week session, 5 weeks in a row, 5 sessions. This time, this is through MBA.org. Go to education, live webinars. It's an accounting and finance webinar covering basic accounting all the way through hedging through the most advanced accounting issues like understanding the dynamics of hedge instruments. So delivery versus payment versus securitization versus all that stuff. So that's what we're going to talk about in the webinar. But today, for the Prophet Doctor, I've been thinking about this, and I'm going to go fast because I've wasted my time on this other stuff. It's profit versus people. Profit and people. We want to make more profit, and we want to do it with people, because the things that we always talk about, success in business is having people doing the right things the right way, and that starts by hiring the best people for the job and then having the right amount of people doing the job. And so doing the right thing the right way is, well, first off, we have to define what is the right thing, and then we also have to figure out what is the right way. Part of that comes back to workflow design, technology configuration, efficiency design. Do we outsource some, insource more? How does that work together to make it be best? And then how do people know the right way to do it? Well, they have to have training. You've got to have procedures. You've got to have understandable procedures. You've got to have somebody like Alice who teaches people how to do stuff. So you got to not only design what the procedures are or the way you do things, you then got to make sure that people do it right. Like, for example, every time a pilot get on an airplane, Southwest, United, American, get on an airplane, the pilot follows a checklist. Even if they've done it thousands of times before, every time a pilot gets ready to launch a plane or make a landing, they go through a checklist. And so we have these processor checklists that people are supposed to follow, but they don't, and then they give excuses, and then underwriting is slowed down because the stuff's not in the right place or in the right order or even doesn't even have the right stuff, and we just take it for granted. But why would we not make sure that's done right? Also, last 2 points, hiring the best for the job. So we need to hire people with cultural alignment. So we first off, when we look at a job posting, we look at skill set. And when we do an acquisition of a company, we look at philosophical alignment. So why wouldn't we look at philosophical alignment when we do job hiring? We should. Yeah. And so, yeah, sure, they got to have skills. But if you hire the right people who can learn, even if they don't know everything, you can teach them more. So if you hire the right people, get philosophical alignment, you can always teach technology or technical skill sets. So that's an interesting dynamic that people don't necessarily think about first. Also, then the right amount. This is about capacity management. So how much is enough? Capacity planning. How many underwriters should you have? So here's a quick example. Let's say we have an underwriter that's doing 20 loans a month because we're a little bit slow. That means that we're taking that entire underwriter's salary and we're spreading it over 20 loans. Well, if we were to double the volume that that underwriter did and move them to 40 loans a month, which is still very possible, we've now cut the cost per loan in half, because we've spread the cost over more volume. That's the whole point of economy of scale. Economy of scale is spreading fixed overhead over a larger volume of output, or in this case, more loans. So we need to think about capacity planning and the extent to which people are fully utilized. So we got to get our people trained, got to know what they're supposed to do, have them doing the right thing, hire the right people who align philosophically, and then have the right amount of people. Do all this, and you'll be more profitable. So there you go, Dave.
Yes.
That's the profit
There you
doctor.
Go. You got the points there. That's a good segment. Appreciate it, Andy. I've got so much we could dive into. We could make that a whole program. But we got to get onto the hot topic, which we're going to do, and we're going to have Brian Boyke with us in just a minute, right after this brief word from our sponsor, Black Knight.
As housing prices climb, U.S. homeowners are holding more capital equity than ever before. Effectively capturing the equity market could pose a unique challenge for lenders who may be limited by the capabilities of their current loan origination system or consumer lending platform. Lenders looking to streamline their home equity business processes can benefit from Black Knight's LoanSphere Empower loan origination system. Using this robust and intelligent technology, Empower can originate both first mortgages and home equity loans on the same system. This single configurable solution will help lenders improve margins, support regulatory requirements, and enhance customer satisfaction. To learn more about Empower, visit blackknightinc.com today.
I tell you, there's so many innovative things going on at Black Knight right now. You need to be talking to them, folks. I'm telling you, they got some cool stuff going on. Brian Boyke, so good to have you here with us, my friend. Very excited to have you joining us.
Hey, Dave, I'm excited to be here and talking with you as well.
For those that may not know you, you are the Director of Product Strategy at Simplifile, and we're going to be focusing today on e-closings and e-mortgages. And we're going to continue with one of the hottest topics in the mortgage industry, digital mortgages. And I'm really interested in your website and your leadership that Simplifile has been bringing to this area. And I love the partnership that you guys have with MERS and how you guys work together. They oftentimes quote you. And Simplifile is probably one of the most quoted companies when it comes to the whole digital mortgage, e-mortgage space. So good to have you with us and looking forward to get into it. You know, when we look at this industry, as we've been talking about e-closing and e-mortgages for over a decade now, it's been slow and coming. But are we really at the point where all that we've been talking about actually going to hit mainstream adoption?
Well, Dave, I really think we are. And I think it's more than just wishful thinking. As you pointed out in the intro and just a few minutes ago, right, there's definitely a lot of buzz around e-closing and e-mortgages. So that's definitely one factor. But more than just talk, if you look at the numbers, you know, you go to the MERS e-registry, you can see that we have more lenders than ever before are set up on the e-registry and getting ready and preparing to do e-notes. And also, if you look at the sheer numbers of e-notes, we've already originated more and closed more e-notes as an industry this year than we did in all of last year. So I think those are promising signs that things are in the right direction. And there's a couple more reasons that we're excited about it at Simplifile. And first is, when you talk to lenders, they're farther along in the digital strategy than ever before because of, you know, the people are embracing digital mortgages. We've got initial disclosures. We've got automated pieces and applications and the automation and valuation and things like that. So I think lenders are better prepared than ever to really take advantage of, you know, the automation. And it isn't just the e-notes. As we look at MERS and we start to track the e-notes, we see more and more lenders are starting with hybrid closings where just some piece of the closing package is done electronically, which allows them to get started sooner than waiting for every document to be done electronically and allows them to get some value out of the process today when just doing a little bit of e. So it allows people to get started sooner. And so people are really making their plans and going forward.
You know, we talked about this a lot and early on, back in 2008, 2010, but it seemed like it stalled. Is there something, some reason why this isn't going to stall this time?
Well, I think the big factor for the stall was the credit crisis back in that time frame where things were really starting to heat up for e-closings, e-mortgages, 2008, 2010. I just think that the technology departments of the banks and the mortgage originators had to focus their attention and shift away from origination and focus more on loan modifications, bankruptcy, foreclosures, and those types of things. And so I think that has been the biggest reason for that. But I can tell you a couple of good things that came out of that during that delay is that we did have a pretty good sample size of e-notes and electronic documents.
Sure.
And then the legal enforceability held up, right? So, you know, we didn't see, you know, some of the concern is in the slow adoption was that would this be legally acceptable? Would this stand up in a foreclosure? And we saw that they did. So as much as obviously we didn't want to revisit that and have to go through that path to learn, we did. And we saw that that was great. And we also saw that because of all that transition to focus on those modifications and the like, that technology can create the efficiencies and offer the scalability on the mortgage production process side of things. So those are all good things and good signs as we start going full speed ahead toward e-closings and e-mortgages.
Well, there was another reason that e-mortgages and e-closings have got a bit of a boost is that in a recent report by the Treasury Department, there was an endorsement on e-notes, and that certainly has got to be helping. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it does. Definitely so. You know, the more we can put any focus on the need for digitization in the mortgage process and specifically the back end, the better. So I think the more focus, the better for us. And in any conversation about e-closing and e-mortgage adoption really talks about liquidity in the secondary market. You know, is there an outlet for electronic notes? And I think by having the Treasury speak to this and not only speak to it, but also talk about how vital it is to get Ginnie Mae and the Federal Home Loan Banks on board.
Right.
I think it's critical in that regard. So I think that's definitely helpful. And I think when those two pieces can happen, I think you'll see, you know, the tipping point for sure. In the Treasury Department, they speak about the counties need to be more involved and be able to accept digital mortgages and e-signed and e-recorded mortgages. And I think that's very true. And there's a lot of things that need to be done there. But I did want to point out is that even though they're only about halfway there in terms of the 3,600 recording jurisdictions across the country taken and allowing for e-recorded mortgages, that does comprise 83% of the population. So it's a good chance that any property being done by any of the lenders listening today can actually be e-recorded. So I didn't want anyone to think that there's a deterrent or an obstacle there. I think for me, 83% is a pretty good number, and I think we can do more. But I wouldn't see that as a barrier to adoption at this point. I think we could definitely move full speed ahead in, you know, that aspect of things.
Other than what was noted in the Treasury report, are there other adoption issues that need to be addressed before we're going to see this in a bigger way? What are some of the other factors?
Well, I think first and foremost is that the closing process is a little complicated by nature, right? There's a lot of different participants in the what I like to call the closing ceremony, right? We've got title, settlement, and notaries. And I think the technology providers have done a great job historically making sure that the processes and process for lenders and borrowers are there and something that we can move forward on in a rapid pace. But I don't know if we've done everything possible for our settlement and title partners so that they can get the same type of efficiencies through an electronic mortgage and electronic closing.
Good point.
And so I think there's some barriers there that we still need to address. A bit of a manual process there for agents. And when they're dealing with lots of different lenders, closing loans a lot of different ways, right, we kind of leave it to them to figure it out. And you know, that's kind of my point on seeing what technology can do to help drive that kind of adoption in that space as well.
Well, there's been some progress, but there's times where it does seem like we have a long ways to go before we're going to see the kind of real adoption that is envisioned by many. Is your view that it's still a long ways off?
I don't think it is. I think there's enough value that can be taken advantage of right now that I think lenders should get started. When we talked a little bit about yield curve inversion and margin compression on the show earlier. So I think, you know, anything a lender can do to help save costs is something they're going to start focusing on. And I think they need to start now. I think we can see that the technology framework is proven. The Merges registry is there. And, you know, it's a valuable tool for registering your e-note. So things can definitely happen. But I think lenders need to start small, and they need to figure out how they're going to derive value from this electronic process, right? And we like to talk about it, simplify being as easy as you can be. So we think with every transaction that's done, there's some amount of paper that can be eliminated and some amount of automation that can take place. So I think if you look at each loan, transaction by transaction, property by property, investor by investor, and make a determination to say, hey, what thing here can be electronic and what can be automated, and take advantage of that and try to institutionalize and operationalize that process. So you're not having these one-offs for this is how I do, you know, all my e-notes, and this is another team and other departments for doing some type of hybrid. If we can kind of get every loan being as easy as you can be and having slight variations and being agile so you can do this process a little different, I think you're going to have greater success than trying to have these bifurcated processes. And then what lenders can do is really see the value of how they're going to leverage an electronically signed document, how they're going to leverage data they can get from a smart doc so that they can make their processes overall much more efficient.
Alice, you have been at Union Home has been early on in the process of, you know, adopting or getting in and getting behind supporting, which is not surprising. You guys are very progressive there at the Union Home. One of the questions that just came in is, how are you guys handling the various counties where you can and where you can't? How are you tracking that, Alice? And that's a question from one of our listeners.
Well, obviously you have to set up systems in order to do that, right? But I guess I'm curious, you know, from a Simplifile standpoint, you know, do you have recommendations, right? Or do you find that people are having to develop these systems in whole outside of their LOS? Or is this something that is really, you know, some of the LOS systems are better partners than others for helping you kick this off? Because to that person's point, tracking this is half the battle on where I can and where I can't, and then getting your system to be able to react accordingly.
Sure. Yeah, no, we've had, you know, every conversation we've had with different loan origination systems about specific lenders looking to go in this direction, they've been very open and interested in working with us. We have, in terms of e-recording and e-notarization, for example, because we have integrations with over 1,800 counties across the country, we get that data almost real time in terms of what they're willing to accept, what they can handle, and then we can put it into practice, right? Because we're having, you know, over 15 million documents annually transacting with those counties, so we get that feedback. And we can make that available to lenders in a variety of sources so they can tap into that. In addition to that, we also have teams of people that call, right? So we've got a good relationship with the counties, and we're trying to make sure that, you know, whatever we recommend to people that we're working with in terms of what can actually happen does actually play out. So we do have that information. A lot of it's shared on our website, and a lot of it's a part of different products and services that we offer to find out about e-recording and e-notarization to see what's eligible there. And then most lenders, obviously from the investor standpoint in the e-note, can determine where they're able to, you know, accept it or not, and then determine which direction the particular transaction needs to go based on that alone. So the combination of all of those different pieces really allows the lender to say, for this transaction, how am I going to, you know, conduct business? How can I be more efficient today, you know, by eliminating as much paper as possible, loan by loan?
Let's run over to the Profit Doctor, Andy.
Hey, hello, Brian. Thanks for being on the show.
Hey, Andy.
I wanted to clarify just a couple of points. I'm pretty sure I got the answer right, but I wanted to make sure. So I'm just going to ask you. These may be very simple for you, but I think it's clarity that we're bringing to the audience. And so, two things. First off, when you say eliminate paper, I hear some people say that, and that means that there's going to be less documents. But I wanted to confirm that that really means not having paper documents, but just having a digitized version of that paper document, or is it something different? Please clarify that for me.
Good point.
Sure. No,
good question.
You're right. I'm speaking specifically of, I guess, transitioning paper to electronic, not necessarily eliminating the number of pages or documents that need to be signed by our borrower at this point, which would be a great thing. But obviously, as you know, there's a lot of compliance documents in those packages that people are making sure that are there. And then obviously the note security instrument. But yeah, I was speaking specifically of less paper per se, not necessarily less documents.
Exactly. The stack is still the same. It's just that it's not paper. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you about, this is, again, very simple, just clarifying so everybody has this straight in their head. I hear people use the word e-sign, and then I hear that people use the word e-mortgage, and it's my understanding that really what we're talking about is the electronic signature on the documents as opposed to... So can you differentiate, or are they the same, e-sign versus e-mortgage?
Yeah, no, I can differentiate that for you. So, and the definitions, quite frankly, have changed over the years. I know the 10, 12 years I've been talking about this, there's been slight nuances that have changed. So the e-mortgage, if you look to, you know, MSMO or Fannie Freddie definitions, right, they're talking about a document or the critical documents such as the notary or the note or the security instrument are signed electronically, right? Or have been e-signed, right? So the e-sign is a digital marking of a document, electronic document. So we're not dropping it to paper and not using ink to sign that document. And then you might hear e-closing or hybrid e-closing, which is also can be a combination of it. So I tend to describe that as any document in the closing package being signed electronically is an e-closing. An e-mortgage or one that is an e-note is those critical loan documents. Yeah, I think I hit on that. The digital mortgage,
that's good.
You know, I kind of see it as the whole automated application to, you know, even final documents, getting the, you know, recorded documents and the final title of policy back from title. So all the way from the beginning to end from that perspective.
Perfect. Now, I just have one last follow-up, if I could, real quick, Dave. So I heard you,
sure.
Brian, earlier in the conversation talk about the validity of the digital signature on a note in foreclosure. And so we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, don't want to make broad-based assumptions on just a couple of narrow situations. And Alice, you may have to help me here, but I was remembering during the crash, and maybe that's enough of a statement to disregard all this, but I remember during the crash in judicial foreclosure states that there was a pretty significant exception to non-ink signed notes. And so are you confident now that we've got past all of that, that the judges do accept an electronic signature on a note in a foreclosure process?
Definitely not an attorney, but from a sheer numbers perspective, there are more positive things happen from that perspective. But I'd have to refer to some other notes or systems that say that there are specific states that, you know, weren't in favor of the e-note. But, you know, my recollection of my findings were that, you know, the process was seemed favorable and, you know, and successful. So I could definitely get back to you on that, Andy.
I just listened to someone talk.
So, yeah.
It was, and we've come so far since then, and especially the awareness of it. There's been a whole lot more publications about it. Everything got thrown to question the last time we were there. We went through this in the housing crisis, and we've come a long way. So I just heard someone talk about this at the Lenders One conference, and at least that speaker was very bullish on that the issues and the questions that were surrounded e-signings related to foreclosures seemed to, in their opinion, it's been abated that we're not going to have that issue. Should we have another housing crisis? Should we find ourselves where that's going to be questioned? In fact, there's more confidence today, especially with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac getting behind it, are solid. And so that's kind of the what I'm hearing as I'm out there listening to all these conferences I've been at here recently, Andy. So just 2 cents on that. Joe, do you want to jump in with a good question?
Yeah, in periods of thin margins, investing in new technologies, even though you know you need to, as sort of a cost-benefit analysis, what would you recommend people do to move toward this, knowing they're going to invest some, but something that will give them returns pretty quickly?
Well, sure. And, you know, actually, I think Andy talked about it in terms of capacity earlier, right, where, you know, the sheer nature of electronic signatures and digital documents, right, allow things to be done faster, right? So I think taking a look at lenders' operations and determining where they see the greatest need in terms of capacity, especially on the back office, right, because we can talk about, you know, final documents or trailing documents, right, and We talked about all the e-recorded documents we've done down there in the final title policy. That's always an easy place for people to get started with a little bit of investment, right, on their side in terms of technology. If they can start working with technology providers and their settlement and title providers to say, hey, I want to get back the security instrument electronically with the data associated with it and the final title policy, that's one quick way to kind of get going down this path and realizing the increased capacity and increased cost savings. And again, I think each lender is going to be a little bit different in determining where their best entry is based on those factors in terms of, limited, technology spend at sometimes. And then they can figure out where they're going to have the biggest improvement. But if, where are you most paper intensive and how do I eliminate that, with some aspect of these? And we've seen a lot of lenders dig into the post-closing aspect and find some real success there.
And we've talked about some of the benefits that are here, but if you could talk about, what are some of the real benefits that people might not be thinking about as they look at this that have been keeping people from moving forward? What's the motivation for someone to jump in this?
I think it could boil it down to two, quite frankly. You've got greater speed and increased compliance and security, right? So I think these are all things we're trying to tackle as an industry, and that increased speed for processing loan documents, processing information and data increases capacity. I'll make that connection to Andy's segment a little while ago. So I think that's the true value there. And then the compliance angle, a lot of the staring, comparing, checking are making sure that we're in compliance and the great risk associated with not being in compliance. So leveraging the e-signed documents, the digital documents and all the data that comes from that allows us to do those checks in a much more efficient manner and overly ensure compliance. So I don't think there's anything new there, Dave, that people haven't really thought of in terms of, what the value is. It's really being able to then translate, what the electronic process is giving them and like I said earlier, institutionalize that, right? Because they have processes that have been built around paper. And so sometimes it's less about the technology and more about how do I rearrange or shuffle my people so they can take the greatest advantage of everything that the digital closing process is giving them. And for us, again, that example in post-closing, because Fannie and Freddie no longer require paper-signed recorded documents to be maintained by the lender, it's a great incentive for them to start going down this path and transitioning their internal process. We see that's the bigger hang-up in adoption, not so much the technology, not so much those aspects of things, but really how do they change their internal processes? But I think it's definitely worth doing because of that increased capacity, the greater efficiency, and also compliance.
We have run out of time. In fact, we're a little over, but I do want to get in one last question. It says, do lenders and consumers have to wait until all the adoption issues have been addressed, or can they get some benefits now? There are plenty of benefits now.
Absolutely. They have to be getting involved, even if they're having conversations with their investors on their ability to accept e-notes. They could be doing some semblance of a hybrid e-closing where they're going through that effort to line up their process to handle a digital and electronic mortgage. So that's going to be an effort. And they need to learn from that and how their borrowers are accepting and how their internal people are able to interact with it. But I think it's important to start now, and there's definitely benefits, all the different pieces that we've talked about already. So waiting until everything is figured out would be, I think, a big mistake, and I think almost too late. Those people would be struggling, obviously, in the environment we're moving into.
Yeah, great point, Andy, when you were talking about we need to get more volume through the existing staff. This is one way to do that. It's working for companies like Union Home. They're realizing the benefits. Look for the leaders, folks. It is happening. Brian, how can people get a hold of you? What's your website to learn more?
Yeah, you can definitely go to the website, www.simplifile.com. We have all sorts of information about, obviously, who we are and what we do, and then different events that we're attending are all listed there. So that would be the best source of all the information that you guys are looking for.
I know you guys will be at the annual conference, and I encourage people to come there. Good. Thank you, Brian, for being here with us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot, everybody.
You bet. Our guest has been Brian Boyke. He is the Director of Product Strategy at Simplifile. And you want to learn more, head over to their website, simplifile.com. We've had Nancy Alley on before. Appreciate our partnership with them. They're a great company. Next week, we've got Lori Brewer going to be with us. She's the founder of LBAware, talking a bit more about technology. I was with Lori this past week in San Ramon, and it's fun to see where she is showing up. She's got a great company. We're part of a mastermind group. There's been some things Lori's been saying lately. I want to bring make sure our listeners are all aware of it. So be sure to come back next week to listen to our guest, Lori Brewer. I want to say again, special thank you to our sponsors, RHMI, Black Knight, Motivity Solutions, Open Mortgage, the MBA, Predictive, as well as Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, Velma, Knowledge Coop, CardTap, Vidyard. Appreciate you being here with us, everybody. Come back next week. Thank you so much for tuning in, and tell others about the podcast. And all those that want to start a podcast, a great way to get your word out to your community and your customers. We have benefited from it. I encourage you to do so. And if you need help getting that started, get a hold of us. I'm happy to share the knowledge. Have a great week, everybody. See you back next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.